something on the air, but let's say you're running a syndicated program. A good automation system can go out and grab it before you're actually going to run it. Automatic downloads.
What about compression? Time compression, if you will. I don't know anything about it, but a friend of mine, or a station nearby, I had a friend who was a jock there, and he just gave me a quick tour of the place, and he said it was a typical music program, so he would, you know, play a song, back sell, play a song, back sell, and the playing of the songs could be programmed to where you didn't wait for that entire 3:45 or whatever the time was somehow, and that's one of the things I was interested in.
Yeah.
Voice tracking, yeah.
But time compression.
The time compression, mm-hmm. That's not really an automation function, but
okay.
You can have the automation select portions of it. I guess you can use it to change the speed or something.
Yeah.
Just change the speed of it.
That's evil.
Evil.
It is, but it's people want to pursue it.
Said it's evil.
If you want to be evil.
What's evil about it?
It's not honest.
It doesn't sound good.
You're cheating.
I still don't
crunching up.
So let's make sure we've got the term defined. You're saying you've got a 3-minute 45-second song and you want to hit your ID or you want to transition to something else right at the top of the hour and you want to get the whole song in? Is that what you're saying?
Okay. Not at all.
Okay.
What I'm saying in this, you know, I don't know any, again, I
yeah,
don't
that's
understand
why I want to try
the technology.
To define it. Yeah.
This is, okay, that was, you know, I say, you know, play X song, play Y song, play Z song. I don't have to wait. There's something that exists because I've seen it where they programmed the songs in, but they didn't play them right then.
Yeah.
Then they ran, then they take their back cell.
Yep.
Then they stuck the next song's
yeah.
on. So they produce a 3-hour show.
Make,
yeah, but
you
no,
make,
no.
You
I,
make your whole playlist up in advance.
Right.
That,
no,
that
I'm not
is,
talking about the evil shit. I understand that.
So that is exact. What you just described is
voice tracking.
Voice tracking. It's one of the functions of automation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, the other thing is.
Sorry to be in the dark there.
That's okay. That's why. I'm glad you're.
I just saw it and fell in love with it immediately, but I know nothing about it.
The evil part is taking three. I just don't understand this. The evil part would be taking 3:45 and making it into 3:35.
Exactly.
So you're changing content in the artists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. No, I'm not into that.
Which can also be done.
I am with Simon.
Andy,
not evil.
Andy,
Rivendell and Airtime will both do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Also for just having your PSAs and your promo
right.
It's not so you can punch them off by hand.
Some of the code was written for a year ago.
That kind of goes along with Live Assist.
We use WireReady. We don't automate, but we use WireReady mainly for that.
And it's mostly
WireReady for our
HD. It's just some scripting for Liquid Soap.
WireReady.
WireReady is studio playlist for the two that I would think of. WireReady is designed for newsrooms. And one of the main features is being able to store visual copy so you can do reads from it.
But is that an automation?
I don't know. It's a yearly thing. It's probably like $1,200 a year or something.
But it's not really an automation system?
Yeah,
no, it automates.
It is.
Not, I wouldn't recommend it. It's
okay.
A very, very difficult program. You have
okay.
to program
it. What was
the other one?
Using it?
Studio Playlist. And Studio Playlist's power is that it's... You can categorize music, so it can generate a very intelligent music mix based on the kind of format that you want.
Is there a cost to Studio Playlist?
Hmm?
Is there a cost to that?
Studio Playlist is relatively about $500. It's relatively cheap. They're in Australia and Tasmania.
Oh, yeah,
I think. That's the only one that I vaguely know. But it's scraped as a music mix.
Riverdale can do that.
So yeah.
There are a couple other systems.
So I'm saying that Studio Playlist is concentrated. That's a really great thing.
There's a Zara Radio, which Zara Radio.
Z-A-R-A.
Zara. Zara you can't use.
It's from Spain.
Can't use it.
And it's
Zara
useless.
Radio.
We have Zara's running
it's useless?
Here.
Right. Well,
it's useless.
It does not report the things you need to report to Sound Exchange. It does not report all four fields.
Okay, but it exists. That's not the point right now. We're listing them.
It exists, and it
exists, and I'm using it for a super simple automation.
What?
What's the cost?
Oh, reporting.
The cost?
Reporting.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's free?
It's free.
But of course, it's competing with me.
And there's another one called Radio Logic with a K. It runs on the Mac. That I was hoping to. We were missing a presenter here.
I'd just like to make a suggestion. I've been to too many of these this weekend where it just becomes a free for all like this. I'd really like to hear the guys who thought about what they're going to do here do it and then have it open up for a free for all afterwards. Because it sounds like you guys have a plan and there's things you want to do and we're just all over the place and it's a free for all.
Yep.
So I'd love to hear what you two and others have, you know, then we can get to others.
And I would also. Follow that up with Pete's suggestion that we do raise hands, so because there's enough people. If we all start talking at once, we'll miss stuff. So.
Okay, Radio Logic.
Yeah.
Do you know the price on that?
It's $50, I think. $50 for extra support, for some support.
Okay.
Any others?
Al had another Y, I believe.
Reporting.
Report. Some of us report, some of us don't. Probably should. I know our station, we've been at 10 years, we don't do reporting we want to do, but we don't, you know, we're an LPFM, we just don't have it together. Done with the why?
I have a question about reporting. If you're doing like 95%, 98% talk. Do you really need? Is there anything to report?
It's a vague area. The one thing I'll say about the copyright: when you report something, that artist will get paid. 50% of the money is going to them.
Mm-hmm.
So think of it from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's evil and so forth, but they are actually getting checks. They got like 20 or 30 million in the bank. That's just sitting there for people who haven't registered with Sound Exchange. There's a fair use issue. There seems to be an agreement that if you don't use more than 30 seconds, that you're okay.
Okay. Got it.
But breaks are a minute.
So you got to register with Sound Exchange, you get paid.
As a musician.
Artists, the copyright holders are getting checks.
Yeah. So I'll have to get a check, huh?
Yeah, and for instance, for a local band come in, they're the copyright holder. If they register, because I tell whenever a band comes in, are you registered? Be sure you do, because they'll get a check. It might be for, you know, 20 cents, but they'll get a check. It is being honest. Of course, RIAA gets the other 50.
But they get to keep the money if it's not claimed within 5 years, I think it is. It was 5 or 7.
I don't know.
Who's they?
Sound Exchange. Well, I mean, there's going to be a limit, but it's like, you know, register with Sound Exchange to get money. It doesn't hurt to report. But it's that 30-second thing. That seems to be the general agreement. That's what we got from Creedwood.
Great. That's helpful.
That is 30 seconds.
30 to 45, I've heard, somewhere in there.
Creedwood said 30.
30?
Yeah, he tends to be conservative, but his job is to be sure we don't get in trouble. You know, so far there hasn't been any problem with this. I think there's been one something against some huge Clear Channel station, some Time 40 station, but we haven't been hurt.
I think we're done with the why. I know for our station, things happen. You don't realize, okay, we're an overnight, and the automation didn't work that night, and it's not a problem. Nobody's listening anyway. It's wrong. You know, we get calls. First time I get in the morning, I'll get a call. You know, where was, we actually played Tom Hartman at 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and 6 a.m. We played 3 hours of Tom Hartman that early in the morning, and those people, they get up and they listen and they call in and they contribute to the station. And so I tell them, whenever it doesn't play, call me 9 o'clock in the morning, let me know. I'll find out which programmer didn't turn the automation on, stuff like that. and we have a consistent person at every fund drive writes a $500 check to make sure we play Tom Hartman 4, 5, and 6 in the morning. So, and you know, we didn't know this person. They come out of the woodwork. So people have different time schedules. People get up at night. One of the individuals is homebound and blind, and he really depends on our station for the news and public affairs. So stuff happens when you do the automation. People will call up, of course, and say, what was that song you played at 2 a.m. in the morning? So then you have to go to your log and look at your log and stuff like that. We do live programming till 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we switch to automation. And then throughout the day, depending upon what programmers show up or not, we'll switch to the automation. And, you know, as you can design a playlist on there, so if your blues performer doesn't show up, you can, you know, pick the blues genre and play off of that. We drop in our promos and our PSAs. We actually don't drop in PSAs, we just drop in our promos on automation. We don't have the volunteer staff to come in and read the PSAs and pre-record them. We do all our PSAs live. But we do promos for our upcoming concerts and events that we have. And so those drop in and run overnight.
So one thing about the PSAs and promos that at least Rivendell can do, not really sure about some of the others, is that you have a cart. Does everybody know when I use the word cart, what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. Let's go back to about 1965, and radio stations tended to have cart machines. You remember those 8-track carts?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
8-track carts.
A cartridge. Gotcha.
Now, and they'd have these players, and you push the button, and it would loop around. And so that was kind of the standard way of playing IDs, PSAs, jingles, and stuff like that. And the terminology has stuck. So when you're looking at the literature on automation systems, they'll refer to something called a cart. You just think of virtually as that cart machine, the tape cartridge, which is playing
cartridge.
But anyway, yeah.
I'm sorry. PSA.
Public service announcement. Well, one thing that some of these can do, Rivendell can do this. You know, on one of these carts, you play it, and then it would stop, ready to play again. Well, it's a tape, so you could put a couple of things on it, and you'd play one, then play the other, and then play the other, and it would loop around. Well, Rivendell has that feature. I'm not really sure of the others. Where
can I ask you to hold that thought? Because what I'd like to do is go through each of these on here and just talk about at a high level.
Okay.
Let's talk about what the features are. I'd like to put the chart though and talk about overall challenges to using an automation system. Challenges that are common to all of them.
Okay, good.
Yes, sir.
I got one. Learning the system.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of systems are just. I mean, you got new volunteers,
yep.
new DJs
yep.
who need to learn the system, and they just can't, for some reason, they just can't get it.
Yeah, thanks, Ron.
And I think the key person, we have a person who's called, she's our download operations person. So she knows the automation inside and out. Someone that is overseeing that. Could be the station manager, could be whoever, but someone needs to be the troubleshooter as well.
Yep, I'll add another one. Maintaining the library.
Oh.
Let's call it the inventory, the actual, as Al was saying, the carts. So maintaining the digital library. So at our station, before we got on the air, we set up a CD ripping station. I'm not going to go too much into this, but we sort of mass imported all kinds of music into our library. We now have about 27,000 music cuts in our library, but nobody went through this to check for FCC language violations or quality of the import in terms of levels and stuff like that. So maintaining the library is a not insignificant function that just is ongoing all the time.
And how big do you want it?
Yep.
Do you want to keep adding to it? New records are coming out all the time.
Yep, making sure that you've got the label so that if you're using it for reporting, you've got that accurate. Making if you're using genres, making sure those are right.
Category. Category. Yeah,
categories.
Library
yeah.
And there's an They don't categorize it, so yep. You have a miscellaneous category yeah. that's filled with 1,000 songs, and somebody's got to go in there and decide, is this a bluegrass song? Is this a blues song? You might have to listen to each cut if they don't get in put in right.
I don't want to take this off on a long tangent, but can radio stations share libraries? I mean, yeah.
Yeah, in theory, sure. It would take some central coordination, I would
say. In fact, we got our initial library. I wish I could remember the name of the station. Somewhere in the Northeast, someone was down on vacation and said, oh, well, we can help you out. And we sent them a hard drive in the mail. They put their library on it. And so we started out with 10,000 songs. Yeah.
Cool.
So you can do that.
It may not be legal. I don't think it's legal. I think you're supposed to have the physical copy of the CD.
No.
Actually, but for radio stations, you pay the copyright when you play it.
Yeah, I don't think that's true, sir.
This would be a different. This is right into the middle of copyright stuff that you're making a copy of it. I mean, that's right into the yep. copyright area. I don't know what rules that comes under. It has nothing
okay,
to
it's
do
a gray
with
area.
Yeah, it's absolutely gray. None of us, I don't think, is a lawyer.
I don't think there'd be any
I am a lawyer, and I do know some of this stuff, but a good lawyer will tell you, I don't know, you got to look that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I don't think there'd been any prosecutions. I don't think it's
yeah.
seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. So just
dark.
My perspective is, as Chadja said, radio station pays copyright royalties when they broadcast a piece of art. And where you get that physical or digital medium, I think, is irrelevant. But again, consult an expert.
As having derailed our conversation, let me say, let's stop derailing the
yep,
conversation.
Yep.
Go back to the challenges, which is maintaining digital library.
Yep.
And also, you got to maintain the computer, okay? Yep. People will get out of that and run a different program, run something else, go around and screw around with it. So then you have to monitor that computer. Also, computer's upgrades, whatever. This has been a problem. It doesn't happen that frequently, but in a period of, 2 years, you got some issues with the computer when you need to upgrade it or whatever.
I may have missed the beginning, but challenges regarding automation, that's your current problem.
Yes.
One that we've had at PHOI is we've been with the same system for the last 3 years, and now that we're going to online streaming, it doesn't work anymore because it doesn't produce the metadata that we need to.
Yeah, that's the recording.
Yeah.
So that's something to look at.
That's our.
Yeah, that's definitely worth putting up as a challenge.
Zara just doesn't give us the information we need. It makes a text file.
What's the name of the system? Oh,
Zara. That's right. I said Zara at the beginning. We couldn't use it because of that very issue, which I found out here.
We're about to start out doing this, but is it a problem where the internet goes down, or you have a bad internet connection? Is that, are people past that because they're smart enough to figure it out?
That can be a problem if you're programming a stream.
I wish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
So let's spend just a little bit more time with that. A self-contained automation system like many of them. If you're not trying to look up metadata on the fly, if the metadata has been captured and is static, that's associated in a database or directly with the music files themselves, then internet isn't a problem. But if you're trying to look up metadata,
and then Grace Node or something.
Yeah, so the internet can be a challenge. Absolutely.
I thought when you dumped, you were also dumping the metadata.
I'm sorry?
I thought when you dumped into the library, you were dumping the metadata as well. But that was part of what was being stored.
With automation systems with which I'm familiar, that's true.
So yeah, that's true. It's true.
It becomes a static thing.
We've had some challenges with sound levels. When we go grab a stream, the stream is considerably lower in sound level sometimes than actually the automated stuff.
Right, or if you, or even importing music into your library, if you don't watch that.
So we've had a big challenge with that too. Yeah, CDs can just vary so much. A middle 80s CD versus a newly remastered.
Right.
You know.
The older CDs are much lower in volume.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we've got a problem with Democracy Now.
Yeah.
Which is coming over to KU at a much lower level. You know, you brought it
really
up.
Really low.
I've heard it. Mike Murphy brought it up.
What's the KU?
It's a Pacific satellite feed
where we're feeding all of our stuff.
Got it.
And Democracy Now! Comes over that, and there's a stream, you know, and the actual satellite. Most people use the
KU is a designation for satellite frequency band they're using.
Yeah.
I'll add another challenge. It's not a huge one. But you need, if you're going to have a digital library, you need a substantial amount of disk space. It's just something you need to be aware of.
And if you're going to expand it, same thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's getting cheaper.
Back up.
Concept of size for me. 10,000 songs I need. So
yeah, we've got about, like I said, about 25,000 songs, and we're just over a terabyte, and a half.
You mentioned the word backup. You definitely want to back up your library on a separate hard drive.
Yeah. We've lost the music.
Yes, we have.
Two challenges. One is if you decide to change your automation system after you've been using it for a while.
Vendor lock-in.
You're locked into whatever you use.
Yeah.
Challenge number two is multiple studios. Multiple sites.
Uh-huh. It adds to the complexity.
What about them?
Because that's what we're doing.
It adds to the complexity.
Okay, but let's expand that. What does that mean?
There's extra work involved.
Yeah, usually we just have one main studio, and so the automation feeds that studio.
Okay, so what happens if you've got two of us working at it at the same time, uploading stuff to it at the same time? Is there
That's typically not an issue.
As long as they're different.
Maybe can we hold this the complexity of multiple studios? What I'd like to do is, after we get through challenges, is talk about the general architecture of an automation system, and then we'll get into maybe some derivatives of that.
Okay. Another challenge we have, this is learning to operate, but the other one is the people that don't learn to operate and need to go to automation. You know, people just say, well, you know, I finished my show and I left. Did you turn on the automation? You know, I mean, it's getting all the staff, getting all the volunteers, however you want to call them, you know, understanding how this works, whether they operate it or not, that they're aware of the importance of the automation. People will say, well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, I just turned the station off. No, we have the automation needs to run.
Mm-hmm.
You know. People don't maybe it's volunteer staff respect. Sometimes they don't respect the automation. You know. They think, you know,
automation is evil.
Yeah, exactly.
But couldn't you set it up so that the automation system at 1 o'clock pushes a button at the switches.
Yep.
And that just then takes over the stream until the next guy comes.
Depending upon the version you use, that would be configuration. We'll get into that.
And that's called switching?
Switching over?
Yeah. There's a device that I think is a typical part, a component in the audio chain that variously call a router or a switcher.
Got it.
We do ours manually. So.
Yeah, so do we.
To keep ours simple, we just have it on a different channel. So if someone comes in, they just bring down or mute the automation so they actually never touch it. So it runs continuously 24/7. But if you choose to do a live show, you just mute your pre-recorded show.
One option, awesome.
Yeah, that's what we do. But sometimes they forget to.
Yeah. No, there's issues with that, but it's just a little less hands-on.
We ready to do overall architecture of a generic automation system? Or did you have a plan for
that? No, that's fine. We can go to the individual systems towards the end.
Yeah, I think it would be just good to sort of explain some terms like heart and stuff like that. So I think other people who know different systems can jump in here, but I know Rivendell and Airtime, Rivendell better than Airtime. But in general, you have an archive of music, you've got something storing all of this digital content. And typically, it's just a file on a file server somewhere. And thus, a group of files on a file server somewhere. So as a component of your system, you need a file server. And as I describe this, keep in mind that most of these things are modular, so you can have all of these functions on one single computer, or you can split it off as necessary. So the one thing you have is this archive of the digital library. Some systems have a database to hold the metadata separately from the digital content. Some leave it in the actual audio files. Like an MP3, you have tags and stuff like that. So some automation systems split that off into a separate function, and some leave it in. So on some automations, you'll have a database.
Rivendell has a database.
Yeah.
Some you have both.
Yeah, true. Some can make use of both. You need a way to get that digital content into the archive, and so you either use a CD ripper or a downloading program to get things off the internet or from your satellite feed. So you need something to the generic term is called to ingest content into the library.
We use thumb drives.
Yeah, it can be as simple as plugging a thumb drive into the computer and copy a file over. You need something to set up your playlist. Rivendell calls playlists logs because kind of keying off of what Al said before, Rivendell came from old-time radio folks. It was developed by folks that were in the radio business back in the, 70s, 80s. And so they use terms that are kind of
archaic,
thank you. And so terms, I think during this discussion, we'll try to interpret those terms as best we can. So you've got a log in Rivendell or a playlist in Airtime and probably a lot of the other ones. And you need a way to assemble that. So to your point, you want to take those first three songs and then insert either Backsell or something like that. So you need two things. You need the ability to assemble the playlist or log, and then you need the ability to record a person speaking to do the inter-song banter or backselling and stuff like that. That part isn't necessarily required. The ability to take live audio and put it in, that's not necessarily required, because you could do that with a separate program like Audacity and then just copy the file over as if it's some other piece of inventory in your archive. But some automation systems allow you to do that sort of on the fly, the live assist.
And what does Rivendell call an event? Because Magaset calls it an event.
I think Rivendell uses the same term.
Event. Mm-hmm. You need the ability to schedule an event.
Yeah.
Whether to schedule on a service announcement, a promo, or an ID.
Switch to your satellite.
Huh?
An event could be switched to a satellite.
Yep.
Yeah, or switch to a stream.
Yep.
An event could be switching to a stream.
Yes.
Is Rivendell a suite of applications?
It is indeed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it actually a flavor of Linux, Rivendell, or?
Runs on flavor.
It runs on Linux. It is its own complete set of applications. They're individually running programs.
Now, is that true with many of these automation systems? Or?
I think it's generally true. There might be some that run on Windows. The Windows model is to just stuff everything into one executable.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in Linux and Unix, the
Airtime
convention is to split things off.
Airtime has a little different approach. It's a server-based model, and everything, all the interaction with it is through a web browser.
Right. But there are individual components running on the background.
Rivendell is really also a server-based model.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's a server running in the background, and there are applications that provide interface to the server. And so it looks like it's not a server-based model, but
right.
It is.
Right. And then you need something to put all this stuff on the air. I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting anything, but sort of the last component is getting all this stuff on the air. So you need a player interface of some kind. And again, that can, again, this can all be running on one computer, or it can be separated off into a separate component. In the case of Airtime, the player is your web browser, so that's kind of convenient. With Rivendell and probably a lot of the others, there's an actual application that runs on the operating system.
I mean, like HTML5? You said the browser plays it, or do you have a player?
We can get into the architecture later.
Oh, okay.
Specifically,
cool.
At Airtime. But, yeah, no, it's, I don't think they're using an HTML5 player.
They were moving to it. Okay. I don't know if they completed it.
Okay. So on the computer that you're going to use as a player, and also maybe as your the computer that you're using to ingest this stuff, you want to be able to listen to this stuff. So you need a sound card. In case that wasn't obvious, you need a sound card on one or at least one of the computers.
Right, and that gives you the ability to have a preview function.
Yes. Yeah, if it's right. If the computer you're using for the player for on air that's connected to your audio board or whatever, if that's not the same computer that you're using to build logs or playlists, then you might want to put one of those on the playlist builder just to preview songs, preview tracks in general. Is that clear? So that's kind of the high-level view of any automation system. Most of them are networked, so you're going to need network, you know, functionality. Probably want to put a CD drive in it if you're going to be ripping CDs.
Put it on the computer?
Mm-hmm.
So that you're ripping, yeah. You're not playing it, you're ripping.
Yeah, you're ripping, not playing. Do people get that? Ripping CDs? Yeah? Okay.
It's time consuming.
Yeah, it can be.
We just get, sometimes we get programmers that, you know, we tell them that play all safe material to just give me their digital files. Every week they come in and give me a thumb drive and I add it to the library.
Yeah, that's definitely faster. You know, when you're dealing with digital music, if it's not on a CD, if it's, as David says, it's on a thumb drive, it's, you're just copying files around. It's one of the huge benefits of digital music. All other, you know, quality issues aside, a digital music entity or piece is just a file.
I got some advice from KVMR there in Nevada City, California, and they've gone through this whole process of making mistakes, and their motto is rip it right, rip it once. And they rip in FLAC or just full wave files. Don't compress it because the disk space is cheap now, and you can never, I mean, you know, some algorithms are quite good, but if you can afford the disk space, just rip it into FLAC. It's compressed, but it doesn't lose any quality. It's lossless. And
importantly, it has the metadata in the FLAC file, whereas if you have a WAV file, in general, or at least in the simplest form, you don't have any metadata.
That's a good point. And they use a program to rip called DB PowerAmp. I don't know why they called it that, but it goes to several online databases to get the data and then lets you look at it. And if you agree, you just hit OK. And if you want to change it and say, this is bluegrass, but there's also some rap in it, you know, put it in both categories, which not all programmers can do. I think you can add as many categories as you want. But it's a lot of work.
Said Wave doesn't have the metadata?
No.
You said, but, so, you well, said rip it as Wave.
So that's a good point to not rip it as Wave, actually.
Well, so
I've learned to rip myself sometimes.
Yeah, we can talk about this. For example, Rivendell, when you rip a CD inside of the Rivendell program, it automatically rips it as Wave.
But it also stores the metadata. So you don't lose it, even though you're storing it as a WAV
file.
It's
just not in the file.
It's not in the file. It's in the Rivendell database. It's stored separately.
Which makes exporting your library later on much more difficult.
Like, for instance, Studio Playlist, it uses OGG internally. But I think it actually stores the metadata in the file name.
That's a common technique.
But it uses OGG, so depending on the, you know, whatever automation you're using, it'll have its own requirements. WireReady requires WAV.
Yeah, as Rivendell does.
So MP3 saves the metadata?
It can. One thing with MP3, though, is it will not save the label. You can add it with some utilities. You can add label in, but most of the utilities won't let you add label when you rip it to the MP3.
It's not one of the
Black, UGG, Vorbis, those. You can create any tags you want, as many as you want.
But you could do that at MP3.
So if you wanted to keep track of where you got that song from, you know, what other station you got it from or whatever, you can create a tag for that with OGG or Black. So.
And Todd's point is that MP3, the metadata format or convention for MP3 started a long time ago, and they only wanted to use a small part of storage in the file for the metadata, and so it's limited. And
no, actually you can add to it.
Yeah, I know you can.
You can, but then some players won't play it.
Yeah.
Right.
You'd be changing the frame. Mm-hmm.
So the point is, be careful when you're ripping, and the automation system in general, if it's a comprehensive automation system, it should do the right thing.
It's a sort of RTFM.
Yeah.
You do whatever your automation system tells you to do, and, you know, work.
I was in a session yesterday, and someone didn't know RTFM. Does everybody know how to read the fine manual? The fine manual.
That's not the technical.
That's the version of it.
The bit about the metadata is that all of the automation systems store and use the metadata. There are differences in how.
Yeah.
And mostly, it does it the way it does it. And as a user, you just accept that it does it.
Yeah.
And this is really good to know.
And whether it's in the file, whether it's in a database, you don't really have to worry about that as a user.
Yeah.
There's good reason why it should be in a database, because you can search it.
Yeah.
If it's in all these files, it just doesn't work from a searching viewpoint, so that's why it really has to be in the database. But as a user, hey, it stores the metadata. That's one of the functions of an automation system. It does.
And it only becomes an issue, typically, is if you're going to switch to a different automation system. In that case, you'll need to know how to get the metadata out and into the new system. That's the main point. We go through.
Isn't there? What would be this? I mean, there's some options about how you actually hook it up. Whether you give the automation system control over the signal, or whether you do what they do here is bring it in on the board.
Okay. Let's talk about various techniques for getting your content on the air from the automation system. As Otis just said, I think a pretty common practice is just. And what we do at WDRT is we just take the output from the sound card, plug it into an input on the mixing board, and it's got a pot on it. And you just treat it as another input source. Another possibility is to have the automation system actually take control of your air chain and bypass the board completely. In that case, I'll probably need some help in describing this because I've never actually done it.
The board then becomes an input to the automation system, and it switches to live.
Air time can be set up that way.
I think
and
I don't think that's the more popular way to do it, though.
Yeah, right.
Airtime is optimal that way.
Right.
And, it's what?
And optimal that way.
Mm.
And that leads to the point of when you're looking at the different automation systems, different ones are good for different things.
Yep.
And which is why I actually kind of like the combination of Rivendell and Airtime.
Yeah.
The nice thing about having it, having your audio chain pass through your automation is that it gives you redundancy. You can have pre-programmed stuff in it so that if someone doesn't show up for their show, it will keep, it will play out that show.
So before we get too far into the details of this, let's talk about how you would actually set this up in this instance. Mm. Everybody understands plugging the audio card into the audio board, right? That's pretty simple. Let's talk about this slightly more complex, I think, scenario where the automation system is sort of in line with your audio chain.
So you're saying that the automation system's output is an audio card. It's going to be
in this first
an audio signal.
In the first instance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
So now, where we've got it controlling the air chain, can someone describe the components and where they're connected?
Yeah. Let me go up here. Yeah, I don't know. It's more if there is a race. Slot coming for a previous session. One way that I've set up systems is that you have. Well, let's say we have a couple of studios, a remote transmitter. Okay. In the studio, we have the board. We have the board here, and I'm going to have the computer, and it goes into an input of the board. My automation computer goes into an input of the board.
So that you're describing scenario A right now.
Scenario A.
Yeah.
Scenario A. And let's do this again. So I did it again. We have two studios.
Yep.
And you're going to want to have some way of sharing database between these, which we may get to later. Now I have the transmitter side here.
Hopefully.
You know how far away I put it. Yeah, that's far.
Yeah.
And I may or may not have a link.
Oh, STL.
Oh, that's fiber optic, huh?
Yeah.
And I may or may not have a link to this one either.
Oh, so those two studios are in physically different buildings?
They may or may not.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so we have, let's say we have two kinds of programming in this radio station. We have programming that we're doing now and programming that's pre-recorded. One way that I've set these things up is the way I'm going to have another computer here.
Located near the transmitter.
Transmitter site, yep, goes in here. And I'm going to have, ideally, I'd like this one to share the database with it too, but let's not worry about that.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have two different scenarios. This is the live assist mode, where I have the automation system going into the mix board, helping the DJ or whoever. Here I have a mode where I'm operating it by remote control,
mm-hmm.
and it's always in the audio line.
Yep.
Now, this automation system here can select things to play that are pre-recorded that you've uploaded to it. Mm-hmm. You can also put either of these on the air. It's a control for what audio, what studio, what audio goes to your transmitter.
So, in general, what's the connection on the left side of that computer out of the transmitter? Is that a network connection?
Yeah, you'd have a network connection.
So that's an Ethernet connection, typically.
If you have a network connection, it would have its own database. It can have stuff stored here. Oh,
so we're dealing with digital audio at this point.
Right.
So does this link analog, or is this
it doesn't really matter.
So it could be either.
Right. It depends on what your transmitter will accept. Right.
It's irrelevant for this discussion.
Well, I want to identify these things because as a beginner, it helps me anyway to understand what the connections are.
You can think of the link from the computer to the transmitter as analog, but it's, well, let's just say it's audio.
It's audio.
It might be analog audio. It might be something like an SPDIF.
Or AES.
Digital audio. But it's audio. And it goes from the sound card to the to probably your processor. It probably would go in this situation, goes through the EAS
sure.
into your processor.
Sure.
But the idea here is that this one here has ultimate control
mm-hmm.
in the sense that it decides what goes on the air. It may put a studio on the air. It may put a program that you've uploaded to it on the air. This one here has what's called secondary control
yeah.
because it's there to help the board op do its show. And this is two completely different ways of using an automation system, yet they're both automation systems.
Andy, real quick, just another comment. You can do full-blown automation at the operator console system.
You
can set up a playlist and just let it go. But this scenario gives a little bit more flexibility in that, you know, you're doing live assist primarily out at the studio computer and board, and then you're doing more unattended operation or mm-hmm. automation.
Or the STL goes down to
yeah,
the internet.
Yeah,
goes
perfect.
Down your
yeah.
Broadcast.
Right. And this also addresses the issue of the late night DJ not turning the automation on.
Yeah.
Or this addresses if you're an MX, right?
That isn't what I was thinking of,
but
if you happen to be in a timeshare, this could be something that is shared between the two systems, and
right.
that automation here might be what implements your timeshare.
Yep.
If we put a computer, the server on DreamHost, is that the one right here by, or not? That's something different.
Not.
Typically not.
A server like I was talking about.
Yeah, with
screen,
Icecast and all that.
That's
separate somewhere in the middle.
That's separate and not really relevant to this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Although, if I were setting it up, I would probably have Icecast available.
But that's on one of the computers on the left.
But not
side
for the public. We're not public. That's not the public.
No, not public stream.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
Andy's talking about a public stream, but Al is
not. Right.
A public stream is what the average listener can tune into with streaming.
Actually, you might have the dark ice origination here following it so that it will follow whatever this computer does. But that Icecast server that you put out on DreamHost is not shown here.
Gotcha.
Simon?
My idea of switching it to control the air chain from the automation computer would be to use like a broadcast tool switcher where they make several where you have a number of inputs and a number of outputs. So you can take in our case, the input from Studio A, send that to air, or the input from Studio B to air, or it used to be hooked up to a mini disk so we could run Democracy Now and I could do some work in the studio for that hour. And that's totally manual right now, but there's inputs that you can control with a serial port, for instance. That would be a lot simpler. What Al described has a lot more fail safes, but also more points of failure.
You're talking about something a little different.
Yes,
it is. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
It's much simpler.
Yeah.
If you use it for carts, though.
It has nothing to do with cards. Whatever the automation system says at 1 o'clock, whatever the DJ does, the automation system is programmed to send a control thing to a code to the audio switcher. The audio switcher then just what no matter what the DJ does, switches to the Tom Hartman feed.
Yeah.
That would be good because sometimes you have programmers that play over their time slot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're like,
really?
What?
Yeah.
So they're like, well, you were just going to go to an internet feed, and I'm live.
My song is more important.
So what Simon has brought up is, I think, a third model for setting up your automation system. And
control a switcher.
Right. What he described is you have a physical device in a rack somewhere, and there's, let's call it an out of band, or there's a separate connection between a computer and this switching device. The technical term is GPIO, or general purpose IO. And it's a thing where you plug something that looks kind of like a serial connector into the computer, or a parallel connector like the old parallel printers. And that gets connected to the switcher, and it actually toggles relays in the broadcast switcher, and it changes what is the source of the input, and what might, you could also change the output, what's actually going to your transmitter. So this is a third, in a way I kind of think of it as slightly more complicated, because now you have to worry about making sure that GPIO connection is
and this solid. Is what we'll be doing for very particular specific reasons for our setup.
Sure.
Because
it's also more traditional broadcasting. That's the way a lot of broadcasting.
If you do that, when you go live, the automation isn't there, and so that means you can't use that system for cards. You'd have to have another system for cards.
And if you go live and the programmer doesn't show up, you've got to get it switched back.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it'll switch back at the end of the silence, the hours.
Simon's disagreeing with that.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with cards. It's just whatever the automation system does, it plays the Tom Hartman feed, it puts in the station, plays your promo.
What I mean is, if it's a live show, that the cart function is not available.
You still have an input on the board.
So you have both.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got an input on the board.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and then
you
could
say
also.
So it requires two outputs on your automation.
So then you could also have.
If you
want to be sure that if the automation system fails and there is a DJ, you can have a silence detector. So after a certain number of seconds or minutes, it goes to a pre-recorded file of Amy Goodman Pledge Drive Special or something.
Ah, good.
There won't be anybody to answer.
I like the idea. It does take the variable of the programmer controlling it out of the loop. And that is, there's good and bad with that. Community radio clocks aren't always the same.
Mm-hmm.
So when they pot up and they miss the first 20 seconds of Amy Goodman because they're looking at the wrong clock or the clocks are wrong. But at the same time, I have to say from a station manager, I like the involvement of the programmer because it's giving them additional responsibility.
Right, sure.
They're having ownership for something other than their show. Oh, I'm responsible for getting Amy Goodman on the air.
Mm-hmm.
And they take pride in that. But it's... The switching system is works better.
I have to say the one that Al described can also do that. So you can override what the operator, the human operator, is doing.
This one would override. Not these.
Well,
yeah, correct.
One point here is that we have the automation system on the computer.
Yeah.
And I have it shown as switching audio.
Right.
Whether one way of switching audio is it might on the computer switch web streams, it might switch files, it might activate an external relay to switch that audio input.
Right.
Still switching audio.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So what Simon was saying about the relay box, that's a way of switching audio.
Yeah.
Or I actually wouldn't use the broadcast tools box. I would use something sold by Canakit.
That's okay. We can leave opinions out. We're just talking about concepts here.
But,
yeah, yeah.
But, broadcast tool is more marketable.
It
works.
Also, what a mixer is, it's a way of taking a bunch of audio and in some ways proportionally switching it.
Sure.
So you've got a switch here and a switch here and a switch here, and this switch maybe it's very smart and has a computer connected to it and has a clock and can do things. And maybe it's really dumb. It's just a push button. I mean, yours wasn't that dumb, but there's just a physical push button and somebody pushes it. But in some ways, there's audio that's getting created and then going through a series. Well, in a simple case, the antenna is right here. But it's all going through a series of switches and
switches and wires.
Or mixers, you want to get that way. Now, either that makes it clearer or it makes it more complex because you're using mixer in a couple of different ways. But,
And that physical switch down to the transmitter side, you need a little cot down there for someone to sleep on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you skip that? Let's say you've got these two remote computers and studios out here on the left. Can you just feed to the transmitter?
You sure can.
You can skip that computer there.
Yep.
So the once a week we're doing a live show, someone walks up there and either flips a switch or learns how to do it on the computer there. So once a week we're doing a live show on a Saturday night, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So that one time you can figure out how to switch it, but the rest of the time it's automated.
I just want to say, though, I'll reiterate again, I think giving your programmers additional responsibility to their show is really important.
Yes.
Because otherwise, they become very isolated. We require our programmers to do 2 hours of additional hours every month beyond their show. And some people are, for that Tom Hartman at 4, 5, and 6 a.m. in the morning, our 9 to 11 o'clock p.m. show people, they have to put on a long song, go out and do that download.
David, I agree with you, and we will as soon as we have programmers other than the two of us.
Oh, wow.
Which is where we're at right now. Yeah.
I don't know how this fits in, but I would really like to kind of review each of those automation systems because this stuff applies to all of them.
Yeah.
This is an overall global.
But what are
the strengths and the weaknesses of those different systems? Because I think what happens a lot is we have to end up making that decision, and at KHOI, we made a somewhat unfortunate decision.
Well, I think of Rimmel as the giant. Okay, I think of it as the giant. It can do everything.
And it's free, and it runs on Linux.
So again, Rivendell came from old radio guys. It's got an archaic.
Actually, it came from Christian.
Right? Yeah, it actually came from Salem Radio Labs, which was associated with
it. Was it in Springfield, Missouri?
Yeah, it sounds like. So, but it's old. It uses old radio terminology. As Otis said, it's kind of archaic. The user interface is kind of old fashioned. When you bring it up, I could probably show some screenshots.
It's under the GUI, right? Under the Linux GUI.
Right, but
if you set it up on touchscreen,
it's graphically.
You can.
It's graphically older.
It just looks old. It's not a modern looking interface. It doesn't look like apps on your cell phone.
And when you go to train DJs, do they take to that easily?
No. Opinion.
It's
like from hardest to learn to easiest to learn. So when you talk about people, they're going to come in there and they're going to do this and look at the system and be like,
hey, I got to say this, though. This is in line with what David was saying about responsibility. You want to be a DJ at this community radio station? This is what you need to do.
Yeah.
And if you can't do it or don't want to do it, you go to the other community radio. So,
hang on.
For this younger generation, and if they're they're into computers and code stuff,
or
they can
iPhones.
Get it. So the younger generation that's into more visual interfaces, this is difficult.
This is what? Difficult?
I find it difficult. I don't use Rivendell.
You're saying the younger people will find it easier?
There's two classes of younger people. If they want a challenge, the younger people want a challenge, Rivendell's their challenge.
Okay.
If you don't want a challenge, I'd go to something else.
I would also add that there are different levels or different kinds of users as we described in terms of the architecture. So for on-air use, just pulling up and starting a playlist, it's not that hard.
But it's hard to train.
It is.
Okay.
Now, is that because of the system itself, or is that because of, you have to use a computer? What's
it's not because you have to use a computer. I had volunteers at DRT. They would do their shows off their laptops and stuff.
Right.
You know, they're computer users. I would get calls every week at 10 o'clock from two different DJs that shared a Wednesday night time slot. And every week for about 2 months, I would get called. How do I do this again?
Some people may not be able to pick it up.
All complex things, is that not true for?
Yes. Okay. Right, exactly. And it depends on your volunteer pool.
Right.
It depends on who's doing the teaching. And how the
it depends on a lot of things. So.
Because I show them how to use it in 5 minutes and they're fine.
Yeah, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but I think we can probably generally agree that Rivendell requires a little bit more attention when we're talking about
clunkier.
But it does everything.
It does everything.
It does more than I think a lot of the other packages.
Yeah. I mean, you can use it to not only generate your sound exchange data, but you can actually submit it to sound exchange. You can do everything.
You want to report everything.
Yep. Near Eric and then Simon.
Yeah, out here where there's no people connected to and everything's
as long as your operator doesn't die.
With Rivendell, you have to have at least part of it in the studio. You have to have at least one part of it, and that component is called RD Airplane. That's a program that the user they bring it up on the local computer. But now, having said that, you wouldn't have to do it that way, but if you don't, it introduces more complexity.
And there's nothing to keep you from remotely controlling the entire thing. Regardless of where the CPU is, you can still control the entire Rivendell system remotely from the studio if you set it up that way.
Yes.
Okay.
Or from your house.
Right. Or, from anywhere you can log in. Right. Okay.
Well, I just want to mention there's Rivendell. It's open source, and you can install it on whatever computer you want. You can also buy a whole system with 1 year support.
Yep.
And I'll just put it all together. I don't know how the support is.
How much is it?
I've met the guys at an NAB show once.
It goes by
$3,000 to $4,000.
Yeah. Yeah, I costed it out once, and it's in the neighborhood of $3,000 to $4,000 for I think like two studios.
That's right.
For online support, maybe.
Yeah, that was like $3,000.
And so maybe they have some good
training material hardware.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Does that include a computer?
Yeah.
It's sound cards, so they use fairly expensive sound
cards.
Right. Very like a specific sound card.
I've tried to install Rivendell a couple of times, and by far the easiest way to do it is to get the CD ISO. It's like the entire operating system, the Rivendell, everything all already installed on a pre-installed operating system. And install that on your
computer. So I'll take that a little step further. Eric is right. You can download a CD image, burn it to a CD, stick it in the computer CD drive, boot the computer from the CD, and you're off and running Rivendell. Yeah. Then at that point, all you do is start entering music into the database, ripping
in
the CDs. It includes everything. Includes
the
operating system.
Is that free too? Or is
that's free. Yep.
Wow.
And it's maintained and supported by the lead author of Rivendell is Fred Gleason, and he maintains that CD ISO image. So that's one way to do it. Another way is to buy commercial support. Another way to do it
is
just
the same guy.
Yes, it is. There's another organization called Triffin. And they make pre-built packages if you want to install it on Debian or Ubuntu. If you know Linux and you want to do some mucking around and custom installation, you can install it from packages. And then the fourth option is to download the source code. They just the other day moved their source code repository to GitHub, and you can fork their repo or clone their repo and do it all from source. So Rivendell is the giant, and it is infinitely flexible. Eric.
And what was the third option?
TryPhon.eu. Some European guys.
.eu, European Union.
Where can you download the source code from? Can you say that again?
GitHub. Rivendell.
GitHub.
Just search
for GitHub. Google it.
Yeah.
R-I-V-E-N-D-E-L-L.
We got 15 minutes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, what's the next most likely to be used system?
Airtime. Airtime is
fine. Airtime?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't even know anything.
I just want to make one more comment about Rivendell. Airtime, and this ties the two together. Airtime is a modern interface that uses the web, not the public web, but it uses it runs off of an internal web server that's running in your station, and you control it by pointing your web browser at some URL. Now, there is one option that they'll host everything for you out in the cloud. But what we're talking about here is hosting a web server running airtime in your station. The tie to Rivendell is that there is a web interface to Rivendell, and there's a full web API, and people are now starting to write web browser interfaces for Rivendell, much like airtime.
So there's
it might be, yeah. And in fact,
was it something that's been, we're going to do
are there other,
from the last five
are
years?
There other, like, do they have an SDK? Is that how that happened?
Yep.
Okay, and are there other ways to mess with it too?
Absolutely.
Kind of, okay,
it's cool. A full, if you do programming, it's a full RESTful interface.
What,
yeah.
One of the reasons I drew this picture up here is that what you want in an automation system here and what you want in an automation system here are somewhat different.
Yeah.
Airtime does a real nice job for this one. Rivendell does a real nice job for this one.
What is it? Okay, we have Rivendell that does everything. What does Airtime not do?
Let's talk about the general architecture of Airtime. Let's try to do
whatever
it kind of quickly.
Way to explain
that's a great question. So, Airtime consists of a web server, if you're going to do it at your station, with a sound card in it, right? And that's pretty much it. And then to control it, you have, you know, your laptop or your phone or whatever, pull up your web browser and you point it at that computer.
Now, you can also do that from the one box that's also acting as a server.
Yeah, good point.
Okay,
so it can be a one box.
But in terms of you saying, I'm okay. So each one of these things we can access, although the accesses may be, the form of access may be different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's using LAMP.
Mm-hmm.
But the internal characteristics of Airtime in terms of the functionality. Because like we're saying, well, it's not the same as Rivendell. Rivendell does everything Airtime.
Right, so.
And we've already implied that Airtime is useful for a different.
Yeah, I like.
What, so what are the characteristics of Airtime?
What's
so,
the cost of Airtime?
It's open source, free.
Why do you like it?
When you ingest audio content into Airtime, you are creating files, and you have some flexibility as to what file format. Rivendell,
Wave.
With some exceptions or customization, Rivendell typically uses Wave as its internal format.
Airtime multiple files.
Airtime can use MP3, AUG, and now FLAC. No, I don't think they do Wave.
Does Airtime have an ingestion function, or do you do
yes,
that separately?
Yes, and it's as simple as dragging and dropping from the file manager
so
to the web page.
In order to get the metadata.
Yes, you keep the metadata, and I worked with
Airtime. You say you keep it.
It's kept in the file, plus entered into Airtime's database for searching.
Where did it get the metadata? You have a CD, put it in the thing. Where's it getting the metadata? Is it getting it from Gracenote?
You can't directly import a CD itself.
That's my point.
Oh.
So you have to have a separate CD ripping function, which goes out and pulls FreeDB or MusicBrainz or whatever, Gracenote or whatever. So,
yeah.
So with Airtime, ripping CDs is a separate function. Once you do that, then you can, as Todd said, use a file manager and drag and drop from file manager into Airtime.
And you could input metadata. There's a function input.
Yes, you can change metadata.
Okay, there are fields for that.
Yes, okay. And I actually got the worked with the Airtime crew to get FLAC, and also to, by default, have label as one of the metadata fields in the, you could have it in the files, but it wasn't in the GUI.
Right.
And so label is now in the GUI.
So, okay. Ron, you had a question or a comment?
I'm just trying to figure out the two. With automation, you are inputting all your data right there. And I'm getting confused with streaming and all of those stuff.
Okay, so we're not talking about streaming at all.
Yeah, so I'm just trying to think like the whole data. When you were talking metadata, I'm thinking.
And what's
it's related.
We got the file in. What are the strengths of Airtime? What is Airtime really good for? I mean, obviously, Al liked it for the transmitter.
Comparing it here, Airtime with the web browser interface, you have something that looks kind of like a Google Calendar. Mm-hmm. You put stuff into it.
That's your schedule.
And you schedule it.
You build a playlist. You drag that playlist to the calendar.
You schedule it to the calendar.
And
that's what makes it real good for here.
Yeah, Ron.
What's the purpose of having? You said two different systems, one at your station and the other one at your transmitter.
Ron, don't go there. Don't go there.
Okay.
Talk about the different flavors of automation.
Okay.
And what the strengths and.
It's kind of the same question.
Go ahead. It's kind of the same question, and it's kind of what I was just about to answer.
Oh.
Out here at the transmitter side, something like the Google Calendar. You're running it unattended.
I know.
This is for use when you're running the station unattended. The reason I like Rivendell better here is because Rivendell, you run RD AirPlay. You have more like the playlist. You can drag and you can hit buttons and stuff like that. And it's actually very nice, interactive, to use this way. What people find as for DJ, what people find difficult about Rivendell is not the end user side. It's the techie setup side. And it's because people who are not particularly techie savvy try to do the administration. And you really need an IT guy in your radio station anyway. But Rivendell will do things like Live Assist. You can say, play these three songs and then stop. You can make up your playlist for the show that has this segment of three songs of PSA and two more songs, and then it stops. And then three more songs and it stops and that kind of thing. You can preset it to do that.
Will it pick the songs for you?
If you want.
Okay.
Okay.
Or not.
Mm-hmm. So you can, like I'm saying, essentially you can set up a template.
Yes. You can set up a template by genres and stuff like that. And so that makes it very nice here in the studio. But on the other hand, if you want something like a Google Calendar to schedule your programs, there is a way of scheduling, but it's kind of on the clunky side. It's kind of that. This is what happens when you jump into something and you find it hard to use. You jumped into the wrong place, and it's actually very nice as a live assist. But on the other hand, to run your overnight, that's where I want something that looks more like the Google Calendar, and that's Airtime.
So you would say Rivendell is better suited for Live Assist than Airtime.
Yeah,
I disagree with that.
And then I have another question. Now, Rivendell can fill up the time and make sure that the station ID is at the top of the hour. Can Airtime do that?
Yes, I believe so.
Or you can schedule it.
So possible.
I know Studio Pilot.
My perception of it is that if you want your station ID at the top of the hour, the Airtime expects you to have a playlist for every hour and that you manually put it at the top of the hour. And I think it's also not good about, you know, if you have 50 minutes of a 60-minute show of doing something nice with the other 10 minutes. On the other hand, one of the great things about Airtime is it really has the concept of shows and people who are putting on the show. So mm-hmm.
people can, you can set up a show and you can say, you know, Fred is going to be programming this show, and Fred can do anything with that show and can't do anything
user
with
the control.
Other show. So it's like this whole user.
Yeah, that's a great point. So maybe since we have so little time, I wonder if it would be good to come up with the questions you should ask about the playlist you're thinking about. Because, I mean, for instance, the Zara thing was critical.
Yeah.
We just didn't ever thought that we were going to have to deal with this, and suddenly we find out after using it for 2 years that we can't use it anymore.
If you were going to do web streaming, it's an incredibly easy program to learn.
Zara?
We've done some amazing things with it, and it's so easy to use.
Yeah, and they could fix this problem in 2 days in Spain, but I don't know why they don't.
Yeah, but I would highly recommend that if someone wants a very simple to use
program that.
But I mean, what are the critical questions? Like, that's one of them. Yeah. Will it report for the copyright? Is it easy to use for, you know, the unwashed volunteers as opposed to the configuration of it?
Our list of challenges is essentially that list.
Very good. So the question, if you're considering starting that, then you would want to look at that list of challenges, which I know everybody wrote down.
No, actually, I will offer this. I'll go back and take photos of each of these pages,
okay,
and then I'll transcribe it into text and post it to the GRC mailing list.
Great.
Okay.
Yeah. It did take notes, but great.
Okay.
I'll be willing to jump on his email and help fill in
how
each of those challenges applies to
individual
to at least Rivendell and Airtime. Yeah. Those are the only two that I'm familiar with.
I can say a little bit about Studio Playlist.
I
know they're two stations.
I would like you to do that, but real quick, I want to put in a plug for the idea of open source. I did a session on Friday on open source, and one of the things I didn't get to say in there is that I really truly believe that the open source model is a perfect fit for community radio.
Yeah.
The open source community is grassroots, DIY, all that stuff. And I think that perfectly fits with community radio. So if you have the time, or if you can find a tech person that's interested in pursuing this, the big challenge of open source is that you got to care about the technology. You can't just say, I want this to work. So in terms of Zara Radio, it just works most of the time.
Yeah.
With Airtime and Rivendell, to some degree, you got to care about what it's doing on the backside. Maybe Airtime is a little bit easier to set up and use. So if it satisfies your requirements as you go through those challenges, Airtime might be the thing you want to choose. If you want to get into some more advanced configuration, or you have the patience to train volunteers, and you don't mind getting bugged once in a while at 10 or 11 o'clock at night,
or 2 in the morning,
maybe Rivendell will work for you. So I really encourage you to consider the open source alternatives. There might be some others out there.
These were the two that we saw that were open source.
I use Megasag. And the reason I use it is for what you said. I just need something to work all the time, ready, and I don't have an open source guy. My open source guy is available, but he works nights and can't come in.
Yeah.
But Megasag plays all formats. It's a DJ program, so it's very user-friendly. It does events, the scheduling. You can schedule IDs and top hours. You can do playlists, multiple genres. You get the metadata.
And it's Mac-based.
It's Mac-based. It's stable, except for this new Maverick OS team out that screwed a lot of things up.
For a week, for a year.
One thing I'd like to add to Airtime that's completely gotten skipped over is it integrates its music database with a DJ program called Mix.
Yeah.
And that's a very powerful DJ program, especially for individuals. I mean, I played just a hard rock show on it, and it's great. You have so much control for, crossfading and stuff, but because you can share that library with an actual DJ program, that makes it very useful.
So you think that's Rivendell, or is that Airtime?
Airtime.
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 Okay. But Airtime won't do Wix. That's interesting.
So it seems like it wouldn't. But let me just finish that thought. So
Airtime right now doesn't have a live assist built into it. It's apparently under consideration for adding it. But Mix is that live assist piece because the database of music is shared. So, you know, there's I'm happy to stay here
Mix
longer.
Mix is 3Xs, by the
way. I'm happy to stay here and talk more about the pros and cons and challenges and benefits and all that stuff. But
you and I need
yeah, right.
20 minutes.
So I for anybody who wants to take off and that's great. Oh, I thought it was 11. I'm sorry.
It is 11:30.
It's 11, but I'm ready to stick around.
11:15 is closing. I'd like to. Are there certain brands or the types of sound cards?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah, because we have a bio.
We just put like top three.
Yeah.
Brands not
sound cards is the topic on the table. Awesome, thanks.
Well, yeah. Sega runs with the sound card that comes with the mouse.
Yeah, but that's a great one. So I think all of them will run with whatever sound card is in your box. Those are usually not professional grade sound cards. So I know that Todd favors the ESI Julia. It's actually JULI with an at sign. And there's both a PCI and a PCIe version. They're only $180. They're using a very, very good codec chip and DSP on them.
Let's move on. Rivendell favors a professional brand of sound card. When I say favors, the developers favor a brand called Audio
That's
Science.
What I use.
Yeah.
Can you say that again?
Audio Science.
Science.com.
Yeah, they're really expensive, but they have like multiple inputs and multiple outputs. They have general purpose I/O connectors on them, so you can use them to control your switcher.
What's really expensive? 300?
Several thousand. Yeah.
There are flavors. There are flavors.
Yeah, there's a range.
One of the things that I want to say is kind of the difference.
It's ESI,
the sound card versus FireWire and USB. Because I really favor FireWire and USB. Off the board. So you don't have the card in this.
Is all that.
We just got a Focusrite, a little Focusrite card.
It's got a separate output stage.
So, lovely little thing. So say that brand again. It's a FireWire or a USB or both?
SPIF plus coax.
So it's a USB sound card. Oh, the brand is.
Focus right.
No. It's on.
Boys.
Well, this particular is Focus Right, RITE Scarlet. It's called a Scarlet. It's just two channels in and out.
For which system?
It has mic preamps, which you wouldn't be
using. You can use it for either one. Yeah.
Balanced in and out.
ESI also makes very well Linux supported USB devices that are using the same.
Yeah, we just wanted three.
Okay.
Which one has the best sound quality?
I think any of these three brands listed have excellent broadcast
sound
quality.
There was a guy who did deep research on sound cards about 4 years ago, and I can't find it. And he did all of the waveforms and everything. And what he discovered was that a $100 Creative Lab sound card was just as good as the 4X.
You know that it was an amazing little difference.
So what you're paying for is
so that's why the onboard
maybe not just sound quality, but durability and flexibility.
Yeah. And the output style.
Yeah.
Right? Both the ESI and the Audio Science and the Focusrite have balanced output.
Which is balanced output, for those who aren't aware, is what you want to use in a broadcast situation. Yeah, it's at all possible.
All three.
Yeah.
Well, if you're going to really do it right, if you came out of the Mac output, you'd probably want to go to a Matchbox or something like that to convert it to balance to go into the,
any of these systems do differential audio level setting for the playlist items.
Airtime will.
Yeah, like Debugger now, we download it. It's always 6 dB down.
Oh, yeah. EQing, yeah.
So automatically, with Rivendell, it's
Okay. Rivendell will, and Airtime.
And Airtime will. Airtime will even do kind of an AGC on the playlist itself. So that as it transitions.
Automatic gain control, volume control.
So if it transitions from a loud song to a softer song, it will slowly over a few seconds bring that song up to something closer, and it just tries to keep a medium throughout the playlist.
I believe Rivendell will not do that automatically.
No, you have to do that when you build the playlist. Yep. But you can do it as you build the playlist. Right. You can look at the waveform and see right where it's at.
$150. Hey, Eric just went over and got one at Best Buy.
The ESI
less online, you know.
The ESI cards are about the same price.
Oh, yeah?
Audio Science are up.
Yeah, part of my consideration is just, as a thought, putting your audio card in the middle of the most outrageous kind of RF, you know, inside the computer. And the USB and...
He's geeking out.
Firewire. Really work well.
Before we break, I just wanted
and
to
And I have
say,
a Delta 44 in case anybody wants one. I can't put it in my computer.
Great.
I might not.
Okay.
Before we break, I just wanted to say thank you to all the tech people in here. When we came here, we were going to put Zara on Windows XP. We're not going to do
that. Well, this is Windows XP, I'll say.
Yeah. So now we'll probably put Rivendell on a Linux system, probably Ubuntu, and a whole bunch of other things that we're getting out of this.
Yeah,
it only happened because we came here.
And one of the things you get,
thank you.
One of the things you get from this conference is phone numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because any of us would be willing, you know, to support you in doing
that. Yeah, there's so much we would have just struggled to figure out on the basics here. This was incredibly helpful.
David, would you mind?
Cool. Would you say that for the recorder, please?
Sure.
I got the first one, I think. I'll just do them all again.
There's a Rivendell mailing list, too.
It's an Rivendell awesome mailing list.
It's all these people always having problems.
Yeah.
Well, but they're like pretty.
Some of them are pretty advanced problems.
I have a question.
Airtime.
A lot of people are using this for Air Assist. What we use for Air Assist and costs us $10 a month is Spotify.
Huh.
It's just for us to pay $10 and have access to that library out there.
Oh.
Spotify's terms of service you need to read. You are not allowed to use it for a broadcast situation.
I'm not using Spotify, but we are.
Right.
No, read carefully. I'll talk to you later. It's great, though.
If we have to get a CD ripper, is there one that you, something to rip?
That's all software.
That has to do with the automation system you're using.
Well, maybe not.
I'll pop this one. It's all part of it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, or look up DB.
Power amp.
It was like
There's a lot of software.
Oh, there's some great ones.
It runs on different Windows.
There's some great open source ones as well.
Oh, great.
CDE, I think they call it.
What?
We had multiple.
CD Ripper.
I don't know that any one is any better than another, as long as it does the job for you.
Yeah, and the great part is we're starting out, so we just want everybody using the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Eric?
So in terms of getting metadata, Music Brains is out there, there's a Grismas and so on. Do people have a feeling that one of those systems is going to be kind of like a standard for for radio, for our kind of community radio?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not at this point, and I will say, if you've got people doing CD ripping, please have them check the metadata that they get.
It's always wrong.
There are always errors, but still grab it because it saves a heck of a lot of typing.
Right.
You can just change what's wrong instead of.
I've seen on Graysnow, because of Winamp or because of Vegas, that generally uses Graysnow, which, and it'll give you alternates because it's looking at the CD number.
Right.
That's where the database is keyed, and sometimes there are different versions with the same number. Give you that.
So Graysnow requires a CD, a physical CD.
Yeah.
And so does FreeDB. Music Brains actually takes a fingerprint of the audio, so it doesn't care where your source is. So that's kind of nice.
You might be right.
If you have any issues with taking your metadata or anything, and this is
you run into the same problems, but a good way to change tons of metadata is Fubara. I don't know if you ever use that.
Fubara?
You can highlight a million songs and change the genre and write them all on the fly.
Yeah. And don't forget, what you're looking for is title, album, artist, label. Those four elements are the those are what you have to look for. Those four elements. That's it.
Yeah, and if you want, you know,
and label is the one that's missing from iTunes.
And if you want your automation system to help you sort of automatically build playlists, you might want to include genre in that.
Yeah.
But and the more the better, you know, for those that support multiple genres, that's even better.
That's what Studio Playlist. That's where its real strengths are in that. Genre stuff.
But the guy at KVMR who advised me, they mostly play music and a lot of folk and acoustic and Americana, basically Americana. Dennis Brunemeyer, he recommended the DB Power Amp because as soon as you put in the CD and it connects to the internet, it gives you the readouts from the four databases that you choose, and you can see, and it highlights like
the mismatches.
Yeah, and so that could be real fast.
What's it called? DB Power Amp CD River.
And so it's not open source, but it was like $50 or something like that. It runs on under Windows. Well, run under Windows XP, I think. Good operating system.
What if it run under Wine?
It's not.
It's everything
that's wrong.
It's not.
Thank you all.
Well,
thank you all.
Thank you.
You
want to
talk later today?
Absolutely.
You want to
take a time?
I'm planning to switch to air time. But I have your number. You seem to be happy to experience with it.
I'm getting out of the radio, so.
Are you?
You can form a support group. It's been my phone number is 608-620-8775.
What is that? What part of the country?
Oh, I'm in Southwest Wisconsin.
Should I just
C-A-N-A?
C-A-N-A.
Yeah.
can a kit? Does it have a name, or should I just look for the switches and can a kit? And how much do you think will be?
Right. So
they're like having a shared space box. Yeah. Right.
The broadcast tools one, $1,000.
Okay.
So you see why?
Yeah.
I recommended it.
Yeah. We just have a unique situation.
Yeah, well,
Right. And really what I need, because it's probably, this is so weird, the bartender from the bar is literally going to come up and switch it, which is, and he'll volunteer to do that once a week, and that's probably the only time we're going on. So it's a little different. We'll have a lot of volunteers making stuff, but they won't. We just won't have a studio. Yeah. In the same way.
I understand, because there's a group I'm working with in Monticello, New York.
It's just a weird situation.
What they're doing is... That's my personal part of business, but I'm retired. That's a new idea I have.
Well, I'm
if your goal is to interact with the community, you go there.
Yeah.
And so basically everything is remote.
Yeah.
So the whole station runs on remote. You go here, somebody does a program at home, you have...
It may be a holograph that they were recording in. It may feel live.
Well, it doesn't even have to be an hour after.
Right.
It doesn't even have to be an hour after. You have the remote kit, which is
So are you starting them?